Welcome to this edition of the His Show podcast, where the game and the gospel collide. I'm Lincoln Lawing, sitting beside my main man, Austin Robinson, and we have our first guest for the His Show podcast. The man, the myth, the legend, Mark Reynolds. Mark played in the bigs, recently retired. Austin, tell us a little bit about what Mark's got on the stat sheet.
Yeah, so Mark's from Pikeville, Kentucky. He was drafted by the Arizona Diamondbacks in the 16th round in the 2004 Major League Baseball draft. He played college at the University of Virginia, and he played throughout his career for eight different teams: the Diamondbacks, the Orioles, the Indians, the Yankees, the Rockies, the Brewers, Cardinals, and the Nationals. And his career stats, he was a .236 average career stat hitter. He had 298 home runs and 871 RBIs, and he was at the big league level from 2007 to 2019.
Mark, you hit 298 home runs in the bigs, baby?
Yeah, it's killing my OCD a little bit. I tried to get two more, but...
I know, man. You stay around and hit two more jacks, right?
I got a couple in the playoffs and a bunch in spring training, so I just rounded up. But yeah, 298, played a long time, and never thought I'd hit one, so just thankful to be there.
Pretty cool stuff, man. So tell us, so we know you retired in 2020. We got your stat line there. So what have you been up to since you retired? What's life been like?
Well, it's been crazy. I retired and then COVID hit, and then, just didn't really do much for a while. Sat at home with the wife and kids, and, we were fortunate enough to go out and play baseball with my son. I got three boys, and to be able to go out, they're playing the travel ball circuit. So, over the summer, kind of got into coaching them and, took over a team of my oldest, my 12-year-old, and been doing that ever since, and a lot of golf and a lot of relaxing, a lot of baseball still. As my wife says, it's like I never retire because we're always traveling with the kids so much. We just got back from Florida yesterday, so it's nonstop. I love every second of it, and it's good to be at this point in my life in this journey.
Awesome, man. Well, that's how I met Mark, was doing a little bit of stuff chaplaincy wise where his kids play and got to know him, and my kids went over there to play with his one time, and they said, man, Mr. Mark's son can hit the ball pretty far out in the backyard. I said, well, his dad could too, so I think that he got it well. So tell us so a little bit about what you're up to now. So, man, on this podcast, we just like to kick back and talk baseball, talk Jesus, and tell us a little bit about, man, like your journey playing baseball up until – you went pro. So up until you got drafted, kind of what that was like. I heard stories about you were on a pretty good rec team back in the day, but just kick back, tell us a little bit about your journey up until the pro scene.
Yeah, so moved to Virginia Beach when I was about 5 years old, I believe, and then we just got into baseball. I played football, baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever. My dad was like, play whatever you want, and so baseball kind of took a liking to a lot, and then growing up there, we started the AAU program, which is kind of like travel ball these days. So I was fortunate enough to be on a team with David Wright, BJ Upton, Ryan Zimmerman. Justin Upton was our bat boy.
How old were you when this was going on?
Ah, man, we were like 12 or 13.
So you had a 12, 13-year-old team with who? Tell us one more time.
David Wright, BJ Upton, Ryan Zimmerman, and myself.
Did y'all lose any?
I don't remember. I don't recall losing that many, but it was a good time in my baseball life and my journey, because playing with such good players pushes you to become better. And you don't want to, David Wright over there doing something, you're like, ah, dang, I got to get better and work hard and practice so I can be able to do that, And then, they see somebody else doing something. So it was really fortunate to be on a team with such good players and such good talent. And, from there, played high school ball, went to college at University of Virginia from 2002 to 2004, got drafted in 2004, and started to get paid.
Hey, there you go, man. So that's pretty cool. Leading up to that, having those stories, playing some youth ball and stuff like that. But tell us a little bit about your journey kind of after you turned pro, kind of what that was like.
It was gonna, I was obviously excited to get you know, my first contract, I signed it, was able to look at it, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, I'm going to Yakima, Washington. I was like, this is pretty cool. Going to go and see the Pacific Northwest and you know, out by Seattle and everything. And no, we get there, and it's flying, and Yakima, Washington is like a desert. You know, it's the total opposite of what I expected.
Wasn't what you were thinking,
no,
right?
Not even close. So, but no, you get there, and then it's kind of your first introduction to professional baseball, and you know, you end up living in a 2-bedroom apartment with 4 or 5 dudes on air mattresses. You know, and was it? I, you know, we had better accommodations in college, but you know, it's a grind, and that's what I loved about it. So 2004 Yakima, then went to spring training for my first time in Tucson, Arizona, and kind of got acclimated to that whole different kind of lifestyle, living in a hotel, you know, with dudes, and you know, finding that path. And then, you know, went to the minor leagues for 2 years, I think. 2007 got called up, and that's made my debut in May.
Can we take a brief detour, if you don't mind? So you met your wife playing minor league ball, but she was the daughter of somebody you may or may not should have been talking to. So tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, they love this story. So her dad was the general manager of the Mobile Bay Bears when I played there in Alabama in AA.
Gotcha.
And so he had always had one rule, you know, to his daughter, he said, hey, just don't talk to any baseball players.
So that was her one rule. Hey, I'm the GM here, but you don't need to be talking to any baseball players.
Correct. Okay. And I mean, it's a lose-lose situation. She's always around the field, you know, always hanging out, and her dad's involved in it. So, but anyway, I didn't meet her at the field. You know, we met her out one night, and she had no clue who I was. I had no clue who she was, and we kind of hit it off. And then I told her, she's like, what are you doing here? I was like, well, I'm in town playing for the Bay Bears, and she was like, oh, crap, I'm not, you know. Then she told me who her dad was. And
it was too late then, though, right?
Yeah, we kind of snuck it for a little while, texting and talking back and forth. And I was always very nice to her dad at the stadium when I would see him.
But he had no clue?
No idea. Until one day I was kind of sick of the whole sneaking around thing. So I was like, hey, we either got to tell your dad or we're going to have to move on from this. Because, you know, I really like you, and I kind of want to see where this goes. And so I called him up, and you know, he said hello. He said, I was like, hey, Mr. Shanahan, this is Mark Rose. Hey, how you doing? What can I do for you? I was like, this isn't one of those kind of conversations. Me and your daughter, Kathleen, have been talking for a little while. And I just want to know if it's cool if we continue to talk. And he hung up right away. And I was like,
oh, so just hung up immediately.
I was like, that's not good.
Blew that up, right?
Yeah. So I was like, well, so I called her back. I was like, yeah, he just hung up on me. So I don't know what that means. And he called Brett Butler was our manager in AA, so he called him up. They were good friends, and kind of, I guess, found out what kind of guy I was or something like that. And he asked Brett if he would let me date one of his daughters, and Brett said yeah. So he called me back and said it's all good, and that's the rest is history. He got married.
No, that's pretty cool, man. That's a pretty good story. I kind of have the same rule. I'm around baseball guys all the time. I have two daughters, and I'm like, hey, I don't want y'all dating baseball players, you know, because I know, but they probably will end up doing that. But real quick, before we get into one other thing a little bit, so you get called up. What year do you get called up to the bigs?
2007 in May.
In that first game, who was that with?
We were in Denver.
Okay,
I got you. Playing the Rockies. I had a couple of hits maybe and a couple of RBIs.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Good debut.
Well, good stuff, man. Well, Austin, what you got?
Yeah, just tell us a little bit about your faith journey and how what that looked like, you know, as a new believer playing in Major League Baseball, and then what that looks like after your baseball career.
Yeah, so I grew up going to church, not consistently, but, you know, I can remember my grandma reading scripture to me. I can, you know, remember my parents taking me to church. The older we got, the less time we kind of had for it. You know, it turned into once or twice a month to maybe Easter and Christmas and, you know, all the big ones. And, but I always had that background of knowing who Jesus was. You know, wasn't committed to it fully, you know, back then. Then I got called to the big leagues in 2007. And one of the first guys I met was Brian Hummel, who was our team chaplain. And you know, and Stephen Drew was one of my really good friends, strong believer, and kind of was like, hey, let's just go to chapel. Let's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so we're sitting there in the laundry room in Phoenix, maybe, or I don't forget where we were. But, you know, I was like, yeah, I kind of like this guy. He was a really cool guy. Brian was, like, is still a cool guy. He's not, he's still around.
He was, right? Yeah.
No, but, you know, it was just something where it kind of sparked my interest because he was young, cool, hip, whatever. Somebody I could relate to. Yeah, he wasn't like a you know, 75-year-old preacher preaching at me. You know, it was, he was a baseball dude. He understood it. So we started going to chapel all the time, and I got really close with Hummel. And, you know, it kind of that kind of kick-started my path to really believing and accepting Jesus. And, you know, like when I was younger or in high school or college or whatever, I knew Jesus, but at some point you got to have that personal relationship with Jesus, which I never had until, you know, I finally accepted Jesus into my heart and got baptized, and it was just one of the best days ever.
Awesome. Well, tell like a little bit about that when you kind of came to that realization, kind of what was going on in your career at the time and, you know, what was going on kind of behind the scenes in your own heart that made you think, man, I'm playing in the big leagues, but there might be something more that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I was struggling, you know, with the outside influences. You know, you're in a spotlight every night. You got to answer for what you do on the field all the time. You got to, you know, worry about people trying to take your job every single day. It was a lot of anxiety, a lot of just nervousness there for me. And, you know, I'd always, from 2007 into 2015 when I got saved, I was like a big ball of just anxious mess.
Yeah.
I always worried about what people thought of me, what people were writing on message boards about me, what people, you know, talking about my strikeouts or talking about, you know, all this negative energy stuff. And I realized that, you know, I'm playing for man. Like, it's I'm trying to please, you know, Johnny at home behind his keyboard talking crap about me on a message board, you know, rather than, you know, trying to play for Jesus and realizing at the end of the day, he's the only one that can judge you. So, you know, in 2015, I took that plunge. We were at PAO, it was Professional Athletes Outreach, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called the Increase Conference.
Yeah. Yep.
And we were there, and, you know, that night, like, people were getting baptized, and me and my wife looked at each other and said, let's do it. Because it's one thing to go in front of your church, you know, in your whatever church you go to in your hometown and get baptized in front of, maybe you know some people in the church or whatever, but I always say the baseball church is kind of, you know, my family and the peers that really know me. And, you know, there's probably 200 guys there. And wives and girlfriends and things. And, you know, to take that plunge and to give your life to Jesus in front of people that really know you and understand you and understand the lifestyle, you know, meant a lot to me and my wife. And it's, you know, a day, honestly, I'll never forget.
No, that's pretty awesome, man. And I know I've heard you tell your story before, and I think one of the biggest things that stood out to me a little bit was prior to that, coming to know Jesus fully, there was a lot of emphasis, as you mentioned, on other people's opinion of you. And I believe, and Austin, you and I have talked about this, when, you know, you come to know Jesus, you realize that other people's opinions don't matter nearly as much as what God thinks of you. And he tells you, hey, there's no condemnation for those in Christ Jesus. So what, you know, he loves you unconditionally. So I think the biggest kind of mark that, well, Mark, that's your name, but mark that God left on you was the fact that you were more concerned with what he thought about you than you were concerned about what everybody else was thinking about you. You think that's true?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there was a peace that came over me when I got out of that pool that night and then even going into the next season to where I didn't really worry about, you know, what the beat reporter was writing in the paper. I didn't worry about any message. I totally, you know, I got rid of all that stuff. It was just like a burden lifted off my shoulders to be able to understand the most important person to play for is Jesus and spread his light and having other people see that in you. And I think that that being kind of that burden being gone really helped me honestly become a better baseball player.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Austin, we've talked about this a little bit. You kind of see that, especially at the younger level, where guys are constantly trying to evaluate their worth based on what everybody else thinks about them or how they did that day, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this in the one of our previous podcasts, but social media plays a huge role in that today for younger guys, because you've got guys out there that are putting stuff online that are really good at whatever position they play, and you hear them talking about it just in the dugout at practice of how this guy's touching 90, how this guy's, you know, batting average is high, whatever it is. They're trying to keep up with the next best thing beside them. So instead of focusing on who they are and who they're playing for, a lot of them at that young age are so focused on playing to impress those around them, impress scouts, impress coaches, impress the fans, whatever it is. Their main focus is on impressing others instead of what it should be on impressing Christ and their relationship with Him. So you see that a lot at a young age.
And that bar always moves, like as you said, Mark. I mean, you probably think when I get to this level and I'm playing this level and making this kind of money, that'll kind of dissipate. But you've mentioned too that you were kind of a fanatic about getting online and seeing what people would say kind of prior to that conversion to Christ.
I think it's human nature. You want to kind of please people. I mean, there's, you know, if you're working in a restaurant and you're the chef, you want to please who you're feeding your food to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it, once I realized that I didn't honestly tune that stuff out, I just didn't read it anymore. I think is what the biggest thing was for me.
That opinion didn't hold much weight.
Correct. Yes, exactly. And I think that being able to move on from that and to be able to just kind of go out there and play and not worry about what anybody said. I mean, I deleted all social media. I don't have Twitter. I don't have anything. I don't have an Instagram. I just focused on what I was doing on the field that night and then going home and being a good father and husband to my kids. Because, I mean, when I was going through all this anxiety stuff with, I would come home from the field, you know, get home at midnight. I'd stay up to 4 o'clock watching TV, go to bed, sleep till noon, and go to the field the next day, and barely saw my wife and kids. Yeah. You know, it's just a lot of things that were on my heart that weren't healthy, and to be able to kind of let all that go and to see what kind of being having that burden off of you and seeing what kind of man you can be with Jesus. You know, it really changed a lot in my life.
No, that's huge, man. That reminds me, I just looked it up as we were talking. I have kind of an approval addiction type thing where I'm always wondering what other people think. And Galatians 1:10, when Paul says, "For am I now trying to persuade people or God, or am I striving to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ." And I think about that with you a little bit, how that mark kind of shifted from, hey, I'm worried about what other people think, to just kind of understanding who God says I am and go out there and play and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, that was, you know, a big turning point, obviously.
So one quick thing, and, you know, I asked you if we could bring it up, but, man, you hit a lot of jacks, 298, and some long home runs, but struck out a little bit too. And no beef because, hey, if any, you know, striking out in the big leagues is something I've never done, but – so you hit a lot of home runs. You struck out a lot. So, man, walk us through that a little bit. Some people get down, like that kid that he looks bad on the first at bat, then he's toast. So tell us a little bit about that, man. That's part of your journey, part of your story. I think you even got a souvenir from your teammates one time at the end of the year. But tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I was like the OG of punching out and hitting homers, right? Back in the day, it was like, you know, slap singles and get on base and steal. And now, these days, it's like, see how many homers you can hit.
You and Adam Dunn, right? Y'all were the pioneers.
Yeah, we were teammates in Arizona, too. So he goes, so I actually was breaking his record that year. And he looked at me and goes, listen, don't go up there and don't try to strike out. You're going to break my record, right? And when you break the record, just turn around, ask to catch for the ball, walk back to the dugout. But no, yeah, it's something that was really kind of ups and downs of baseball, man. Baseball teaches you so many life lessons and how to deal with failure and how to overcome things that normal people don't really have to deal with. And, you know, early on, yeah, it really bothered me. You know, in 2009, I broke the record for strikeouts in a season. I think it was 223. And, you know, I was kind of embarrassed, kind of like, dang it. You know, know, I don't want to be known for this, but mm-hmm. the older I get and the more I look back on it, they're like, people ask me about it. I'm like, how many big league records do you have?
Yeah, there you go.
And people ask me, do you want someone to break your record? I'm like, no, I want to have a big league record. Like, that's pretty cool, I think.
And you were on Jeopardy, you said?
Yeah, there was a question about strikeouts on Jeopardy. And, some of my friends were texting me and said, dude, you made it. You were an answer on Jeopardy. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
That's what's up. Austin or I have a combined zero strikeouts in the big league. So no offense to that. But like you said, I think that's huge. Like, just understanding the ups and downs of baseball, the game, it's just a crazy cycle, and learning how to deal with that failure and get back out there is, because you're not going to get a hit every time.
And, you know, these kids that I coach these days, they're, you know, they expect to get a hit every time. They come back to the dugout and get mad if they hit, like, a line drive to somebody. I'm like, guys, this is life lessons. Like, you're going to fail more than you succeed in baseball. You hit 300, you fail 70% of the time, you're probably going to be in the Hall of Fame.
True.
So, you know, these guys, they're so I just think that baseball and them growing in this game, even my sons, like the first at bat down in Florida, my little 10-year-old, he struck out and, you know, had some tears welling in his eyes. You know, I was like, what's the deal, man? What, you mad you struck out? He goes, no, mom was watching, and I was kind of embarrassed. So, but, you know, they're dealing with that failure and then lifting their head right back up going out there. I was like, go out there and take a hit away from somebody, you know, and he made a good play at shortstop. So, you know, it's just – there's ups and downs. You help a team win in a lot of different ways. And if you didn't have it that day, you go, you know, go play some defense or steal a sign or do something.
So you feel like when you kind of weren't as worried about each individual at bat, I mean, you took it serious, but you kind of got in the groove and played your game and understood who you were playing for, things, you kind of got in a flow.
Yeah, definitely. I think that once I matured and once, you know, my whole transformation happened, it went from constant worry and worrying about, like, I couldn't sleep that night because we're facing Kershaw the next day, or, you know, mm-hmm. something like that, to, you know, God already has this written, right? It's all planned out, you know, it's all in his hands. And I just gave it to him and went out there and I prepared. I obviously did all my work and prepared the best I could, watched video, did everything I could. But at the end of the day, it's in his hands. And that's kind of was my piece towards the latter part of my career there, and was able to really enjoy playing baseball again and really kind of taking it all in and having my boys in the clubhouse with me. You know, they were like 7 and 5, and, you know, they still remember, you know, going there and hit off a tee with Nolan Arenado, or, you know, Juan Soto flipping balls to him when I played in D.C., you know, or playing catch with whoever. You know, they remember this stuff. And my middle son, he's 10 now, his favorite team is the Atlanta Braves. I'm like, dude, why do you like the Braves? He goes, well, because when one of my last, his last road trip, just him alone, mm-hmm. Reed, he came with me and took him to the field every day, got to eat the spread, hung out in the clubhouse, shagged BP. And during the game, he stayed in the clubhouse and just watched TV.
He didn't come out.
No, so he was like, you know, it was like his best memory of, and I love things like that. And, you know, not saying that I wouldn't have cherished that before, but really understanding the impact that you can have on your own kids or kids that watch you in the field, or, you know, even signing a ball. Like, I signed we had this guy over the house doing some work for us one day, and he was like, that's so cool, you play baseball, blah, blah, blah. And my wife's like, just sign him a bat or something. So I mm-hmm. signed him a bat, and I wrote John 330 underneath my signature because I don't have a number anymore, so I got to figure
something out. Yeah, you got to figure something out, right?
So I wrote John 330, and it's from the increase conferences. He must increase, I must decrease. And that's something, he came back a couple weeks later and was finishing up, and he goes, you know, I went home and I looked up that verse. I hadn't opened my Bible in 5 years. And even something as little as that, really, it just made my day. And for him we sat there and talked about it for 20 minutes about the verse and about Jesus. So, like, things like that is something that really, that I really, really get satisfaction out of.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. So, Mark, as we close out, just hit on this subject for a minute. Do you have any tips for any young ball players, young believers that are in the game that maybe you've experienced that you can pass on to them?
Yeah, I mean, when I was young, I can remember just really having fun playing baseball. There was no pressure like there is today. Like, these kids can go on, like, Perfect Game website and look up their stats. You know, like, there were no stats back in the day. It's like, go out there, get a couple hits, go to you know, Golden Corral after, and crush the buffet. You know,
oh, yeah.
But I think that not being so caught up and kind of what everyone else is doing. Worry about yourself. Work your tail off. And I'm going through it with my kids right now, too. Even on the travel ball, the circuit right now, it's these kids are all worried about their TikToks and their, you know, Instagram pages and stuff. And like, you guys are 12 years old. Get your heads out of your phone. Look, we're on the beach right now, and you guys are looking down at your phones. Yeah. You know, it's like, just go and play the game and don't, it's not a job when you're 10, 12 years old. It's a game, and have fun doing it, and take all the pressure off and be a kid is the biggest thing.
No, that's good, man. I think too, yeah, everybody gets wound tight, coaches, kids, parents, you know, they do that. But as we kind of wind down today, I just want to, as we like to do on our episodes, just talk about, if you're wondering, hey, what is that, you know, Mark talked about this conversion, this transformation, and, you know, a guy that had, you know, he's playing in the big leagues, making good money, and there's still something out there that, hey, what is that? You know, there's something missing. And what we like to tell people is that is the gospel. That's where the game of baseball and the gospel of Jesus Christ collide. And it's very hard, impossible to play at your highest level of emotional and satisfaction and peace unless you know who you're playing for and why you're playing. So we tell on every week, hey, God loves you unconditionally. He created you with a plan and a purpose for your life. And us as humans have thwarted that plan through sin, because we know all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And we try to fill that gap through whatever, through playing ball, or like Mark talked about, performance, or what does Joe on Twitter have to say? I mean, all these things we try to fill it with. But we have fallen short of that, and God sent his son Jesus to walk this earth sinless and die in our place. And so all the falling short, all the debt that we owe God to our sin was carried out on the cross through Jesus' death. And then 3 days later, Jesus rose from the tomb to defeat death in this earth and live in victory. And then it rests with us. I mean, he says, hey, do we accept that we fall short and accept what Jesus has done for us? Or do we try to find that significance in our own accomplishments, our own numbing of the pain? I just want to encourage you guys, if you're playing ball, whether you're going through a tough time or whether you're doing well, I just want to say, as Mark mentioned, until you get to the place where you realize Jesus loves me unconditionally, there's no condemnation, and I'm playing from a place of victory and significance, not for a place of victory and significance, there will always be that gap, that unchecked box. And what we want to be on here to tell you is, no matter what level you've played at or play at, Jesus can free you from that. He can free you from worrying what everybody else thinks, and you can be focused on who God is and what he thinks and what he wants you to do. And then the way you play the game is a gift of worship back to him. So if you don't hear anything else today, make sure you hear that. Anything else we need to touch on before we sign off? Austin, you got anything? Mark, you got anything?
Yeah, I'll just kind of touch off what you said. One of my favorite Bible verses is James 1:8, and it talks about how someone's double-minded, and when you're double-minded, you're unstable in everything that you do. And I think that goes hand in hand with what Mark was just sharing and what you were just sharing with us. When you figure out what your focus is in life, and focus on your relationship with Christ, and nothing else is taken away from that, then I think that leads you into knowing how you live your life, knowing how to have a relationship with Christ, and how to move forward in what it is you're focusing on. And your main focus should be your relationship with Christ when you do become a believer. And I think it just makes everything easier, makes everything come into clear focus when you're focused on Christ and not the people in this world or social media or stats or whatever it is. So I think that's a good word from you, Lincoln, and a good word from Mark, and just for people listening and take away that you're going to have points in your life where you're double-minded, where you've got all kinds of things pulling at you, but just focus on your relationship with Christ so you can focus on him and him alone.
And letting that guide how those may. Mark, I'm going to put you on the spot real quick. John 3:30, he must increase, I must decrease. So how does that play out in your life? Like, you retired now. Tell me a little bit about how does Christ move toward the forefront and Mark to the backdrop a little bit.
Well, I think that whenever I kind of see myself, you know, the lens starts to get a little foggy or a little dirty on it, you know, that means that I'm putting myself ahead of Jesus or my beliefs. So I think when I see myself in you know, all the fleshly things of the world, you start gravitating towards that. You got to have that in the back of my brain all the time. I got to increase Jesus in my life, and I got to decrease my own wants and pleasures right now, because I see myself going down the path I don't want to be on. And that verse just reminds me of when I fall off the path and I put more Jesus, if I increase his, you know, whether it's reading my Bible or praying or doing a devotion with my kids at night, just things like that keep me centered and focused and increasing Jesus in my life and decreasing my own wants is just a verse that really hit home with me and helps me kind of stay grounded and you know, on the right path.
Awesome, man. Well, one other thing. So it did work out, though. After your future father-in-law hung up on you, he called you back. Everything was good. It's all worked out now?
I believe, yeah. We got 13 years, almost 14, 3 kids.
There you go. So it all worked out.
It's all good.
So dating baseball players is okay. It can work out okay.
It can work out, I promise.
Well, good to know. Well, guys, listen. If you want to reach out, got any comments, questions, or anything like that, man, you can find me, Lincoln, at LincolnLawing.com, and then AustinRobinson at FCA.org. Feel free to reach out. Mark, if you want his number or email, you reach out to us first, and we'll ask for his permission to be able to give it out. But, guys, Austin, thank you so much, brother. Mark, I can't thank you enough for joining us, man. Honor to have you on. And looking forward to the next episode of Sunday 15 or our next guest. This is the His Show podcast, where the game and the gospel collide. From Lincoln Lawing, Austin Robinson, Mark Reynolds. See you next time.